We're holding this forum to address one of the most urgent issues of our time, the troubled state of America's middle class.
Obamacare is hurting our economy. It's hurting middle class families. And it's hurting the ability for employers to create more jobs.
America does better. Our economy does better. Everybody does better when the middle class does better. And we've got more ladders for people to get into the middle class if they're willing to work hard.
We need fresh ideas. Republicans want the president to join us in fighting for the middle class.
The middle class. It's a term that gets thrown around an awful lot. Maybe that has something to do with the American dream. Maybe it's some kind of ideal to be neither filthy rich nor dirt poor. But what does it mean numerically? And what does it look like and feel like to be middle class in Kansas City? I'm Gina Kaufman, here to help get us started as we tackle these questions is Neil Irwin, the senior economic correspondent for the New York Times. He joins us from D.C. Hi, Neil. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we're going to focus on Kansas City shortly, but let's start out with a broader scope. How would you define middle class in America?
Well, a simple place to start is the median household income. That's the household that's right in the middle of the income distribution of the entire company, of the entire country. And that income level is about $53,000 a year. Now, that can vary a lot among metro areas. So if you're in New York, if you're in Washington, San Francisco, and you're living on $50,000 a year, you probably don't feel terribly comfortable. It can be hard to make a go of things in a lot of big cities at that kind of income level. But I think there's a tendency to look at these numbers and only think of it in kind of numerical terms. And I think there's a wide range of what mathematically we would call the middle class.
So mathematically, what we call the middle class is not just based on income. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So if you say it's kind of the middle income bracket in the country is something like $40,000 to $60,000 or $30,000 to $80,000, you can come up with any kind of numbers you want. I think what I think in most people's way we think of things, it's not just a number. It's a way of living. It's can you afford a decent house? Can you afford to send your kids to a decent school? Can you afford a car? Maybe not the newest car. Maybe not the nicest house. Not the biggest house. But afford those basic things that I think for generations in the U.S. we've considered kind of a hallmark of a middle class existence. And not being fearful that you're not going to be able to put food on the table next week.
People prioritize various kinds of things differently with the money they do have, so it might be kind of hard to measure middle class based on lifestyle. Someone might travel but not have health insurance, for example. Is lifestyle how most of us measure our own class status, assuming we do that at all?
I think it is. And, there's an interesting phenomenon when you survey people and ask, what is your income class? Are you middle class, poor, affluent, wealthy? A lot of people put themselves in the middle class much more than you would think based on just the normal distribution of income. And I think what that's telling us is that, first of all, there's part of an American culture thing where no matter how much you make, you want to think of yourself as middle class. Even if you're making a comfortable six-figure existence, people think of themselves as middle class. But there's also an element of you frame your own well-being and how you feel based on the people around you. And so even if you're, making a couple of hundred thousand dollars a year, if you live in a neighborhood where everybody has that kind of income and everybody has a house the size of yours, you think of yourself as middle class, even though by the scheme of the country, you're actually doing quite well.
So just who you know shapes your perception of what's average.
I think that's right. Absolutely. If you grew up where in an environment where everybody has a big 3,000 square foot house and everybody goes to a fancy private college and everybody goes on nice vacations to resorts and that sort of thing, you think of that as a very normal thing, and you think of that being a middle class existence. In reality, if you look at the income distribution across the country, I think most people who are really in the middle of the income distribution, again around $50,000 a year in household income, they probably can't afford all of those things. They might be able to afford one of those things, but not all of them.
Well, as far as people adopting this self-identity as middle class, is that partly about that they perceive that they could be doing better and that they could be doing worse? I've heard this theory about the middle class that a democracy needs this critical number of people who live in that space where they could either advance or fall backward economically, because that's what motivates people, like both the fear of becoming poor and the aspiration to do better.
I think there's something to that. And I think what you saw through the second half of the 20th century in the United States was a period when the U.S. middle class did very well. And you saw very strong wage gains among median household incomes. And that coincided with a sense of kind of unity as a country, a sense that we're all in this together, a sense of purpose. I think one of the risks, as we see more income inequality and the people at the tippy top of the income distribution doing well, whereas middle incomes have not really risen over the last 15 years, I think that creates a sense in which there's no sense of shared prosperity, and economic growth does not come to the benefit of everybody. And I think one of the keys to U.S. economic success in the 20th century was that kind of shared sense of purpose of what the U.S. is all about.
Well, you know, you talked about World War II. I wonder how the recent recession, as a more recent historical event, plays into the way we think and feel and talk about the middle class.
It's interesting. You know, you saw a sharp decline in median household income starting in 2008, and it hasn't fully rebounded. So the most recent numbers we have are 2013, and the 2013 income numbers for the median household are not back up to, they've not risen above 2008 levels yet. But it's actually a longer story than that. If you go back a little further, we still are below the level of median household income of the year 2000, so 15 years ago. That's a sign that we really had this last 15, 18-year period where there hasn't been a meaningful gain for the families at the middle of the income distribution. Now, there are some demographic reasons behind that. So when there's divorces, you have fewer dual-income families, things like that. But part of this is just that the U.S. economy has not been translating growth into incomes for middle-class Americans the way it used to.
Well, how much of this is about social and economic mobility? If the middle class disappears, there go several rungs in that economic ladder. So if you're down, it's going to be that much harder to get back up.
Right. I think there's an argument that one of the challenges that our economy faces is a lack of pathways into the middle class. So if you grow up poor, if you grow up in a difficult situation, you know, one of the great things about the middle part of the 20th century is there were all these ways that a person with a high school education, you know, who grew up in a rough environment, could climb their way into the middle class. You know, plenty of industrial jobs that paid quite well, good benefits, good pensions, all that sort of thing. Now, if you grow up without advanced education, without the things you need to really be a professional in society, it's much harder to find that job that pays that, you know, $50,000 a year middle class kind of salary. So we're seeing a bifurcation in the labor market between people with advanced skills who are doing just fine, and people who don't have those advanced skills, who, you know, are making, you know, $9 an hour at a retail store, for example, and that's very challenging to make that leap from kind of service employee, that jobs that don't require much education, into that kind of higher tier type of environment.
Well, thinking about how education fits in, do you think that something like possessing a higher education gives you maybe membership in a certain class, even if your economics don't put you there? So like if you're below the poverty line, but you have a higher education, for example, is that part of what you have as an asset, part of your wealth, so to speak, your capital?
It is. I mean, you know, you look at there's plenty of people with PhDs who don't make a lot of money teaching for colleges, especially if they don't have a tenure-track job. They work as adjuncts. I mean, there's plenty of stories of people where there's a kind of compensation that comes in forms other than cash. And, you know, people who do jobs they love that don't pay all that well. People who, you know, maybe they have a law degree, but they work in public service, you know, working for helping people navigate the legal system in a charitable environment. I mean, there's plenty of people who make those choices. You know, I think we often use incomes as a proxy for class and for how people are doing, because it's the most quantitative thing we can look at, and it's hard to measure. Okay, this person has a degree but is only making, you know, $40,000 a year, because it's their choice and they find other rewards out of that. But I think when you think about class, about incomes, about how the economy is performing for an individual, you certainly want to take all that into account.
How much does the middle class concept vary from city to city or region to region?
You know, a great deal. More in how people perceive it than in the actual numbers. There's definitely variation. You know, it's a more expensive, you know, as I said earlier, trying to live on the median household income, $50,000 in New York City, is very hard. And it's a different environment from living in Kansas City or even a much smaller town where that can live quite comfortably on that.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, that said, some of that, though, is a choice. You know, nobody forces you to live in New York City. Nobody forces you to, and if you are going to be in New York City, nobody forces you to live in one of the fancy neighborhoods in Manhattan. You can live out in the suburbs, and you'll have a longer commute, and it'll be difficult. You might have less space than you would if you lived in the Midwest.
Your friends might not be there.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a question of trade-offs and you know, whether we should think of just because New York or Washington or San Francisco, but just because they're more expensive, does that mean that this radically rewrites, you know, what counts as middle class, what counts as upper class? I think if you talk to people in big cities, they'll say, oh, my goodness, you know, my spouse and I, we have a combined income of $200,000, but we live in New York, so we feel poor. That, if you look at the numbers, doesn't really add up. If you look at even the average incomes in a place like New York, you're still doing pretty well in New York City on $200,000.
So why do politicians talk so much about the middle class?
Well, it ties in with what we talked about earlier, which is a lot of people, even people whose incomes don't really support it, think of themselves as middle class. There's a self-identity in the U.S. And when a politician says, I want to make life better for the middle class, what they're really saying is, I want to make life better for you, and trying to have a message that resonates with the mass of voters. You know, that's become the primary messaging approach of the president in the last few months. So President Obama, his entire State of the Union, his budget plan, their term for it is middle-class economics, is the line they keep using. And they are pitching a mix of tax and spending priorities that they say are aimed at the middle class. In the Republican debates over their primary race to, you know, next year to for the 2016 election, you're seeing some echoes of that too. You're seeing a lot of Republican leaders wanting to frame their policy ideas as something that's good for the middle class. So it's clear this is the frontier on which the 2016 election is going to be fought.
Does the New York Times reporting on economics in America support the idea that I think most people have, that the middle class is being squeezed in America in 2015?
I think it is. I think, you know, the simplest number is the one I mentioned earlier, which is median household income that really has made no progress in at least 15 years. You know, there are plenty of numbers you can look at and ways of crunching it, but the simple math, and you don't really have to overthink it, says that this has not been a great time for middle-class Americans. Again, there has been economic growth over the last 15 years, over the last 30 years, you name the time period, and quite strong economic growth for periods of that. But that economic growth isn't translating into income growth for middle-class Americans the way it used to.
Thank you, Neil Irwin, senior economics correspondent for The New York Times. This has been enlightening.
Thanks for having me.
For today's conversation, we wanted to know what Kansas Cityans think middle class means and how they decide whether they are it. Our team went to a few different gathering places, the Plaza, Crown Center, Oak Park Mall, and here's what we heard.
The middle class is such a broad term. It can go anywhere from you make just enough to be able to afford your groceries and to send your kids to school and put clothes on your back, all the way to, you know, you have a luxury home and you have luxury cars and you have all these nice things, but you might not be in the top, very top 1% of the nation type thing. So I think a lot of Kansas City fits into that term, I guess.
I think that if you're middle class, you probably own a home or, you know, a condo or something. You own property.
I own pretty much everything I need to own, but I don't own a lot of brand new stuff. I rent.
It's really hard for you to have your own car and have it paid for. So it's best that you have, like, used cars, I guess.
I work a lot. I go to school a lot. Especially being in college, I see kids that have their school paid for.
In terms of job or career, a person that puts in a lot of hours of work and maybe doesn't see as much of outcome or payback in terms of like salary. And
to me, the middle class would be someone who does not need any kind of state or federal assistance.
To not have to worry if I have to go to the doctor, so to be able to afford health insurance, possibly traveling, but on a budget.
Travel per se would probably be more restricted than say someone in an upper class situation.
I think it's a good thing being middle class. You know, we're not too low, not too high, because when you have too much, you have a lot of people wanting, and then you have a lot of things that you get that you really don't need.
Or if I'm going to make a major purchase, I would have to think about it very carefully.
Middle class in Kansas City is actually upper class in other cities, which is an advantage to Kansas City. People with a lot more money in other cities, I don't know that they have a higher quality of life.
Lots to discuss in those comments from men and women on the street. You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Central Standard is going to take a short break, but when we return, we'll have guests who can tell us more about what it means to be middle class right here in Kansas City. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman, and the big question on today's Central Standard is, what does it mean to be middle class in Kansas City? You can give us your answer at 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. Monica Potts is with us now. She's a writer and reporter, and she's also a New America Fellow. She's published an article for the American Prospect called Kansas Bleeds the Middle Class. Hey, Monica.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We are also joined by Jeff Pinkerton of the Mid-America Regional Council. He's got all kinds of local statistics. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, Gina.
Just before the break, we heard what Kansas Cityans on the street had to say about the meaning of middle class. Anything catch your attention, Jeff?
Yeah, a lot of it was more lifestyle oriented, not necessarily attributing a dollar figure to at this point I'm in, at this point I'm out. It was more lifestyle, and it was more a matter of how you feel about where you are in your life. And if you're comfortable with that, you may consider yourself middle class.
Did the things that people were using to measure that for themselves seem logical to you?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. A couple of them talked about being able to travel, and I think a lot of folks think of that as almost a luxury. You know, when you get your house, your car, your everything, your day-to-day taken care of, you know, being able to travel is kind of what sets you out of everything. All my fundamentals are taken care of. I have some leftover to go out and enjoy the world. And I think that's what people kind of equate to middle-class lifestyle.
Monica, what did you hear in those comments?
It's interesting. I did see them. I heard them define middle-classness by what they could afford. And what I've seen in my reporting over the years is that people actually stretch to try to afford the things that make them feel middle-class, even if they're really not within their realistic budget. And so, you know, they might go into debt, or they might stretch to buy a car that maybe isn't really, the monthly payments aren't reasonable, just because they feel that they're middle-class or want to feel middle-class.
Monica, would you summarize the premise of that article, Kansas Bleeds the Middle Class?
Sure. It was about the rise in poverty in Kansas City, especially the Kansas City suburbs on the Kansas side. And what was interesting to me is that there had been a huge rise in poverty in the Kansas suburbs, more than 100%. And the number of people living in poverty in the suburbs was actually higher than the number of people in the city.
And this was in 2013.
2013, that's right. But what's interesting is that a lot of the people, both who were in the middle class in the suburbs and also were themselves poor but didn't define themselves as living in poverty, didn't recognize what poverty looks like. I think people think of poverty as being, you know, destitution. But actually, there were a number of people who really couldn't afford the basics who, and that number had grown. And so there was a lot of concern for service providers as to how to meet that need.
So what's the difference between destitution and having basic needs you can't meet? Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Sure. I mean, there are people in this country who live on a very, very low income. They tend to have a number of problems and they can't afford food. And then there's a higher number of people who really struggle to pay their rent, put food on the table, buy clothes for their kids, and they might actually cycle bills through some months so that some months they're paying some of their bills and some months they're paying other bills. They might run out of gas and not be able to fill the tank, but they tend to not think of themselves as living in poverty, and those are people who don't necessarily seek out help as soon as they need it. And that's a big concern for people who care about the, you know, the living conditions of and standard of living of kids especially.
Why did this subject of like changing poverty demographics in Kansas City interest you? Where do you live?
I live in Washington, D.C. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm just curious where that interest came from.
You know, I'm from Arkansas, and the Brookings Institution has been in the Brookings Institution is a think tank here in D.C. They've been studying the rise in suburban poverty over the past few years. And the Great Recession really poverty in the suburbs just catapulted upward. Poverty in the whole country rose. But one of the things they found was that suburban poverty rose a great deal. And
nationwide.
nationwide, and it rose especially high. Kansas City had one of the fastest growing increases in the country, and so that's why I was drawn there.
How did you do your reporting on the ground here in Kansas City?
I tried to reach out to people who were working with those families, and I talked to a few families, and generally what they said was that one of the problems they were facing, a lot of people who had been in the middle and working class fell into poverty and waited too long to seek help, and so they went through their savings, they maybe cashed out their 401k, they sold cars, and they didn't really find a way to stabilize their finances. They kept thinking that the next job or the next best opportunity was around the corner. And then there was also the trend of people moving into the suburbs for job opportunities. So the service sector jobs that are growing so quickly, jobs like at, you know, being a Starbucks barista or working at Bed Bath & Beyond as a clerk, those jobs are really available in the suburbs, and that's also where good schools are. So people were moving into the suburban landscape to be able to send their kids to good schools, but really not being able to afford housing and cars and gas.
So what are the implications in there for the middle class? What do changing trends in poverty tell us about the middle class?
Well, it really tells you that there aren't many opportunities to move up into the middle class, which is one of the things Neil was talking about. If you have a job as a clerk somewhere in retail, what, you know, maybe you could become a manager, but managers don't make that much more than the clerks do. And there really isn't a ladder that you can climb that takes you to a more stable income. You can go to college, but you might have to go into debt to do that. And even some of the jobs that require associate's degrees or bachelor's degree don't pay as well as they used to, or don't pay well at all. And so one of the things we think about when the shrinking middle class is that people are falling into poverty from the middle class, and then there aren't pathways back to it. And so you want a vibrant middle class in this country. That's how we think of America, and that's how we think of American opportunity.
Is that the only reason we want a middle class here in America? I mean, is it like a love affair with an idea, or is there a substantial reason to care about that?
No, there's a substantial reason to care. Primarily, our economy thrives on the middle class participating in the economy, buying things, sending their kids to school, participating in the workforce as, you know, an educated and well-skilled workforce. That is what the middle class economy has relied on in America. And we also we don't think of ourselves as a country with a vast amount of poor people and a few very, very wealthy people. And it would be hard to imagine what our democracy would look like if power and money were centered in the 1%, which is, you know, the big concern with the growth of inequality. Most stable democracies have a stable middle class. Those people participate in the political economy. They participate in elections. They participate in their local governments. The middle class is really what makes a democracy thrive.
Is this, when you look at the issue of poverty in the suburbs, just getting back to Kansas City, is this a question of the number of people moving in and out of the middle class and in and out of poverty, or is it a question of just where people are living? Is there something to be said about the big picture about this, or is it just shuffling around of addresses?
It's not shuffling around of addresses, although there is some of that. It is a matter of people moving into poverty. We also have a very outdated poverty line definition. And so there is an increase in the number of people who technically don't live under the poverty line, but actually can't really afford the basics. And so we call those the near poor. America is the only country that defines its poverty level as what it takes to meet a basic level of goods. And that basic level of goods hasn't been updated since the 1960s. And most other countries define their poverty line as sort of related to the median income, and we don't have that in this country. And so there's a growing number of people who technically don't meet the definition but probably count as poor.
So Monica wrote her article in 2013. Jeff Pinkerton of the Mid-America Regional Council, what have we been seeing since then?
Well, the data that we have, actually the most recent census data, does go back to 2013, and as we talked about, you know, middle class is a moment of a state of mind. In order to do some analysis, I did try to crunch numbers and actually come up with a definition of middle class.
Yeah, that's good, because, you know, in the absence of a definition, we should probably have a working use of the phrase. What'll it right. be?
Well, I found a study by the Pew Foundation, and they looked at middle class as households with incomes at 67% of the median to 200% of the median. It's a very broad definition in my estimation. So in Kansas City, the median household income was $56,000. That gives us a middle class range of about $38,000 all the way up to about $112,000. Looking at this measure, Kansas City does have a larger middle class as a percent of the total population than the U.S. 48.2% of our population, of our households, are middle class. But what is interesting, since 2000, that figure has dropped. It was over 50%. It was 53% and has now dropped to 48%. So we are seeing, as Neil alluded to earlier, a squeezing of the middle class. We're losing that segment of the population towards the higher and lower ends.
Before we abandon the definition part of this, when we talk about median household income as a measure of someone's sort of class status, by which I think we're partly talking about their comfort level and access to all sorts of things that we would consider valuable, does it matter how many people are in the household? I mean, the difference between $50,000 for a household of one or two and $50,000 for a household of five, that's huge.
Sure, absolutely. If it's 50, exactly. You just said it very well. And so overall, when you're looking at the whole metropolitan area, that's really going to play out. And you're going to have 2.3 folks per household on average. So it's going to balance out. So that 50,000 does tell us a lot about the relative income of that household in the metropolitan area.
So you were just saying that what you're seeing as far as the direction the numbers are moving is that the middle class in Kansas City is getting squeezed?
Yeah, actually they're being squeezed nationally and here locally as well.
How do we see that playing out locally?
Well, I think at some point it's got to give. I mean, this is, and Monica alluded to this, the middle class is very important to the economic well-being of the country. People have to believe that they can work their way up out of lower income into middle income, on up to upper income. And that's what really motivates our economy going forward, people wanting to strive and to do better, making their getting education for their children so they can have better lives when they grow up. And if we see that the economic growth in this country is being filtered down to a very small, higher portion of our income, highest income brackets, that motivation is going to be eroded a little bit, and that's going to be hard for us to continue to grow.
Can our sense of being kind of our own sense of whether we are middle class and whether we are able to get the things we need, that motivation piece you were talking about, can your situation be masked by a relationship with credit? I mean, people's access to things is not 100% determined by the amount of money in a bank account.
Exactly. And I think far too many Americans did rely on credit and to purchase things and to feel those material, gain those material items that make them feel like they're in the middle class. And as we all know, those things come back to bite you if you aren't able to pay for them in the long term. We were a little bit aware of that after the recession. You know, people actually stopped using their credit cards, but that was very short term. We have a very short term memory on a lot of that stuff, and I see credit card debt starting to go back up again.
So if we see the middle class in Kansas City shrinking, why do you think that is?
Well, I do think that the growth in the economic growth is really being filtered down to higher income groups. If we were to look at the jobs that are available, you know, the traditional middle class jobs, you could graduate from high school, get a job at a manufacturing plant, and you could work your way up into middle class very easily. That was the old
standard. By just advancing within a company?
Exactly. You know, and you could just be into that company forever. Those days are really gone. Manufacturing, Kansas City has a pretty strong manufacturing base, but we're not really adding many more manufacturing jobs. The jobs that we are adding a lot of in the region and in the nation are more skewed to the lower income, lower paying jobs, and the higher skilled, higher paying jobs. So the jobs in the middle are being lost, and that ladder that people will use to move up in the income chain is being taken away.
Monica, what's your sense of this? When you talk to people in Kansas City, did their experiences bear out what Jeff is saying here?
They really did. They worried about the next steps for themselves. I spoke to someone who I spoke to people who sent their kids to Head Start, which meant they lived at 100% of the poverty line, and they really didn't envision a future for themselves anymore that where they could buy a home and where they could have a job that paid well. And so I think that when you see the middle class stretched, you start to stressed, and you start to see economic opportunity collapse a bit. You start to see people's hopes and dreams for themselves collapse a bit as well.
When you talk about being able to own a home, that is historically a big part of how we've, I mean, that's the American dream, essentially. That's also a big part of how we've defined middle class. Is it possible that we're seeing a definition of middle class that's shifting, or will that always be the definition?
I'm not sure, but I will say there was a slight uptick in some surveys of people who classified themselves as working class as opposed to middle class, which was new. I think the working class idea is something that's been left out before in America, but more and more people are identifying with that. The people who work and maybe aren't comfortable, so maybe that is shifting a bit.
Yeah, here in Kansas City, housing is altogether different, and we've alluded to this earlier, than on the coast. It is easier to afford a house, even at a more modest income level. So I don't know if home ownership really equates to I've made it to the middle class as much here as it may in other parts of the country.
So thinking about Kansas City, Jeff, what are some kinds of jobs that I might get that would put me in the middle class, and what are some kinds of jobs that might not get me there?
Well, the jobs that I had mentioned earlier, manufacturing jobs, those are good jobs. Those are good middle-class paying jobs. There just aren't as many of them. They're not being created. Construction, same thing. What is really growing, it's more of, I think, individuals need to put the burden on themselves to be marketable, and that is really making sure your education level is high, and you have the skills that are marketable in the economy. And that really involves getting out to the local community colleges, getting some certification classes that may help you become more marketable and get that job that's going to put you out of the lower income groups into the middle income areas.
But something I can imagine a person thinking in that situation is, you know, if I am having to work as many hours as possible to make however many dollars an hour I'm making go as far as it can, I'm not even in the middle class, which means that there are certain basic needs I can't afford. How am I going to prioritize community college classes in terms of time?
Well, that's a very good point. And I think our community colleges do a pretty good job of accommodating people's work schedules. But you're right. There's individuals who maybe are working two jobs and it's just not going to be a possibility for them. But to me, education and being marketable and having the skills that are not going to qualify you just for that retail job or just for that food service job, but something that's going to get you in the door to a company that has a career ladder is so vitally important. And it's going to be difficult, but I really think that's a key way for the individual to do that. From a society perspective, there's a lot we can do. Access to jobs. A lot of these good jobs are oftentimes out in the fringe, out in the suburban areas. And if you're in the urban core, it may be difficult to access those jobs. So if there are ways that we can improve the transit to access those jobs, would be another societal way to help people find that ladder.
Monica,
I would just... Oh, I just wanted to add real quickly something that as far as education and transportation and the costs associated with those things he was talking about, we have seen in the same period where we've seen middle class incomes shrink and people falling out of the middle class and wages stagnate, we've also seen risk shift more to the individuals. So you had a situation in the 1960s and 70s where in many states higher education was almost free, and now it's much higher than it used to be, and so people may have to borrow money just to go to a state school. And so people are making less, and they're also having to take more costs onto themselves, which I think is another part of this situation.
So we've talked about middle class being kind of this aspirational place. Do you think that when people are middle class that they aspire to be in the upper class? And what does that look like in Kansas City, Jeff?
Oh, I absolutely do. I think people always, you know, no matter where you are, there's always someone down the street that has the nicer car. And whether or not that is should be a motivation, it is. We're a very materialistic society. And so I think there's a downside to that. But the positive side is it does keep us going. It does keep us motivated to continue to want to do better and move our economy forward, move our families forward. And I think there's always aspiration to do more.
Jeff, with the political leverage of the term middle class, do you think that we should have a clearer definition of what it means? Because we've spent now quite a lot of time even just defining it.
Well, I think Neil hit it on the head. I think politicians are always going to use it to define you. Sometimes they'll say everybody below 250 or 1,000, but that is going to capture the vast majority of the country. So I don't know if it makes sense to have an actual definition that that we can all agree on, but I think politicians are going to use it to their advantage.
Jeff Pinkerton here from the Mid-America Regional Council. This is great research you've done. Keep us posted as you learn new things, okay?
Will do. Thanks, Gina.
And Monica Potts, author of the 2013 article, Kansas Bleeds the Middle Class for the American Prospect. Thanks so much for your time. This is really interesting stuff.
Thanks for having me.